Hello and welcome along again to the Northern Agenda podcast, your weekly look at what's making waves in the towns, cities, villages and suburbs of the proud north of England. I'm Rob Parsons, a journalist based in Leeds who follows the ups and downs of regional politics in our region, and I try and make sense of it every day with an email newsletter called The Northern Agenda. Today, I wanted to get listeners up to speed on what I think will be the most consequential and interesting election in the first half of this year in the north, unless, of course, Rishi Sunak is forced to call an early general election in the next few weeks. On May the 2nd, the more than 2.5 million people who call the North East home will go to the polls to choose the region's first ever Metro Mayor, with a host of new powers devolved from Westminster and a multi-million pound war chest to spend. Unlike many of the elections for the North's Metro Mayors, it's going to be a closely fought, dramatic battle with high stakes, as the winner will have the chance to transform a region that for so many decades has felt left behind and ignored by decision makers in government. But whoever is elected will also lead a new mayoral authority with a big budget whose arrival will likely shake up the political landscape in the North East. Today on the podcast, I'll be speaking to the man in charge of setting up that new body, Dr. Henry Kippin, for a rare interview where he'll tell me how the North East devolution deal will work in practice and what it will mean for people locally. First, though, let's just set the scene with one of the North East's most knowledgeable political journalists, Dan Holland, the local democracy reporter for Newcastle and the North East. Dan, welcome.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having us.
No worries at all. So you've been following the saga of North East devolution, and it is a saga. It's been going back a few years, pretty much all the way through. But you can tell us a bit about how we got to this point in a minute. But just as a starting point, I mean, you know, as a follower of politics, I'm really interested in how all this stuff works. But for people more generally in the North East and maybe outside the North East, why should they care about this? Why does devolution and who gets to be the mayor of the North East actually matter?
Yeah, so I think the main message that people have been trying to get across, and certainly the councils are putting out there, and that, you know, we at the Chronicle and Journal in Newcastle have been trying to put out, is that really this is about the North East taking much greater control over its own destiny. There are always going to be limits on what the mayor, what local leaders can achieve. But this is a really, really momentous year for the North East. As you said there, and we'll touch on in a minute, this devolution deal has been so, so long in the making. It has been such a tumultuous, protracted saga to get us to this point. And it feels like finally, after so many years of waiting and arguing about it, the North East will finally have more of a chance to put itself on a slightly more level playing field with other parts of England, parts of the North that got ahead with the devolution process a bit quicker than we did and got, as a result, bigger, better funded, more powered up devolution deals than the smaller existing one that we have here at the moment. And yeah, it gives hopefully a chance to, for whoever wins the mayoral election, to take a stab at, you know, reversing some of the huge inequalities we have in our region, taking on issues like child poverty. The North East has the worst child poverty rates in the country by some margin and has been going in dramatically the wrong direction for the last 10 years or so. Other issues, taking on things like transport, radically reforming the North East public transport network, which is in need of major, major work and is a huge project that is going to take decades to deliver. And yeah, it just feels like now is the time for the North East to really start delivering on this stuff. And whoever is the mayor is going to be at the forefront of that.
Yeah. So I guess we were talking about what a protracted saga it is. And if you go back all the way to the beginning, at that point, you know, areas like West Yorkshire, which now has a devolution deal, didn't have one. Greater Manchester, which is now sort of leading the way as a trailblazer on devolution, was much further back than it is now. So I guess it just goes to show how damaging the sort of delays to this whole process have been for the North East. But just if you can, in a, you know, relatively concise way, because you could talk about it all day long, just take us back to how we got to the point that we've now arrived at.
So if you want to take it all the way back, and I think it's probably worth mentioning, if you go back 20 years, back to 2004, when I was just starting secondary school, which feels like a very long time ago, the Northeast had ended up being the only referendum under the Blair government on whether to have an elected regional assembly or not. That was defeated, an overwhelming no vote. Interesting footnote to that is the no campaign was led by a certain Mr. Dominic Cummings. Whatever happened to him and the large white elephant, blow-up kind of elephant that they took around the region campaigning against it in what was a very successful no campaign, which preface to things to come, you might say. But yes, once that regional assembly idea was out of the way and the devolution deals and elected mayors was the way that the government under the coalition and later the Tories decided they were going to do things, we had initial talks beginning between the seven Northeast councils in 2013, those seven councils being Northumberland, County Durham, and then the five in Tyne and Wear, which are Newcastle, Gateshead, North Tyneside, South Tyneside, and Sunderland. That was all progressing and even got to the point of George Osborne, who was the Chancellor at the time, coming up here, signing the devolution deal, doing a photo shoot with everybody. And then at the 11th hour, it all fell apart. The four councils south of the Tyne decided, actually, they didn't like the idea of a regional mayor, pulled out, and around the time when places like Greater Manchester and Liverpool were pushing ahead and signing theirs, the Northeast went back to square one. What happened as a result of that was that the three councils who were in favour, Newcastle, North Tyneside, Northumberland, went away, brokered their own deal with the government in the region that's since been called the North of Tyne. They got that devolution deal signed in 2018. In 2019, Jamie Driscoll was elected as the mayor. But ever since then, there has been a move to try and reunite the region, if you like, and to create, I think it's probably important for the region that it can speak with one voice rather than being, as it has felt for so many years, broken up and beset by bits of infighting, often between members of the same party. So there have been negotiations happening for the last few years, and now finally we are at the point where almost, it's not quite over the line yet, there's still a little bit of work to do on the Parliament side of things, but we now finally have the devolution deal that will cover all seven, and a mayor, all being well, will be elected on May the 2nd.
A very protracted saga, but obviously it's not over yet. We've still got the election to come, and we'll get to who the main contenders are in that shortly. But I think the reality is, I suspect, that if you were to go out into many parts of the North and ask people in Manchester or Leeds or rural parts of the region what the metro mayor does compared to what their local council does, I think many of them probably wouldn't be able to answer that question. And there's a job of education to do, which we'll get onto with Henry Kippin in our interview later. But can you just explain what powers will the mayor have that to distinguish them from local councils that exist already?
Yeah, so I suppose the first thing to say with it is to make clear to people, the mayor does not replace local councils. If you live in Gateshead Council is not being abolished. It is not turning into the Northeast Mayoral Combined Authority. The new mayor is not responsible for your basic council day-to-day functions, social care, bin collections, parks, libraries, whatever it might be. The mayor does not take responsibility for that. What they are responsible for is a load of issues, a load of funding and a load of decision-making powers that we do not already have as a region. Transport being one of them. We see in other parts of the north, certainly Greater Manchester and I think West Yorkshire are pursuing this as well. The franchising of bus services is one example of a power that that many mayors are pursuing. That means taking bus services that have been privatized for many years and taking control back of them into public hands. There are also a raft of other powers relating to transport, largely through a pot of funding, which is billions and billions of pounds over the, at the minute, I think the funding is guaranteed up until 2032. There's a number of things that money could be used for. Suggestions have included stuff like putting money towards the reopening of the Leamside train line, which has been a really controversial issue and a topic of much discussion in the Northeast for many years. Other things we'll look at in the devolution deal, and it's probably worth saying that the people who negotiated up here talk it up a lot as being the, I think, the best funded per head in the country that's been agreed so far. There's an investment fund for the mayor to use to support regeneration projects, economic growth. That's worth about £48 million a year over the 30 years of the deal. Indicative budget of about £60 million a year to put towards adult education, towards skills. About £70 million to put towards housing and regeneration projects, you know, unlocking brownfield land, bringing forward, you know, troublesome housing sites that might not have been developed otherwise. It's also worth noting that as part of the deal, the Northeast will join Greater Manchester and the West Midlands in negotiations for what's called a trailblazer devolution deal, which potentially means even more powers and beefed up accountability as well, I think is probably the way of putting it. And I know there's been talk about the likes of Andy Burnham having to go before committees of MPs to kind of be scrutinised and justify their work. And that's the kind of thing we could see with the Northeast Mayor as well.
That's really interesting, and we'll be asking Henry about that later, how the trailblazer negotiations are going. So finally, who are the likely contenders to be the mayor? Because it's a bit less straightforward here in the Northeast than it is in some other parts of the North, isn't it, thanks to internal divisions within the Labour Party?
It is, absolutely. So first things first, you'll test me. And we've got six candidates so far, and I'll rattle them off. We've got Jamie Driscoll, who's the current North of Tyne Mayor, independent. We'll come to that in a minute. Kim McGuinness for Labour. Guy Renner-Thompson, Conservative. Aidan King, who was announced this week for the Liberal Democrats. We've got Andrew Grey from the Green Party and Paul Donaghy from Reform UK. As you've suggested there, as has often been the case in many of these mayoral elections in the North, you would think in an area like the Northeast would be a sort of a slam dunk for Labour. Big Labour area, traditional Labour heartland, you would expect them to win. It is a much more complicated picture here than the uninitiated might realise. There was a big row last year, people might remember because it was in the national press quite a lot. Jamie Driscoll was the Labour mayor of the North of Tyne. He is now the independent mayor of the North of Tyne. That all came about because he and Kim McGuinness were fighting against each other to try and get the party's nomination for the Northeast mayoral election. He was very controversially barred from standing in that contest. A very complicated row, which we don't have time to go into here, but go and read up on the history of it, surrounded his appearance on stage with Ken Loach, the film director, who was a controversial figure within Labour circles. Jamie then subsequently decided to quit the Labour Party, stand as an independent, and go up against Kim, who I suppose would be, you'd expect would probably be just about the favourite for the election, given that she's the Labour candidate and this, it's a Labour-dominated area for the most part. But it's going to be absolutely fascinating to see what impact that has on the election. You know, Jamie and his people are very bullish about their chances. They will point to success of independent candidates in mayoral elections in the past, Ken Livingston in London probably being the most high-profile example of that. And it's going to be so interesting to see how much of that, you know, traditional Labour vote he can steer away, whether that puts him in a position whereby he becomes potential winner, or whether it means that it splits that sort of left-wing vote, if you like, and creates a pathway for somebody else to come through and potentially think that they can win. It's such an interesting election, and it's really difficult to know at this stage how to gauge the impact of having this, you know, prominent, well-known independent candidate in there and what that's going to mean for people. And to an extent, I suppose, how much people outside of the political bubble have been paying attention to all of this over the past couple of years, and, you know, whether how many people, when they get their ballot paper on May the 2nd, will immediately recognise, oh yeah, Jamie Driscoll, I've read everything about him. I know the full background to this. Or do they just go, oh, independent. Interesting. Don't know what that is. Don't know who any of the other candidates are, but maybe I'll vote for them anyway. It's going to be, yeah, really, really interesting. And I'm fascinated to see what happens.
Yeah, well, hopefully in the course of the next few weeks, it's actually not that long to go. I think it's 16 weeks or so until the election. We at the Northern Agenda and at the Chronicle and Journal will be able to help inform people about who these candidates are and what they stand for so they can make a more informed choice. But Dan Holland, thank you so much.
Thanks, Rob.
So the political landscape in the Northeast is going to look pretty different in a few weeks' time, with a new elected mayor leading a newly expanded mayoral authority for the entire region. But I really wanted to get a better sense of just how some of the changes might play out and what they'll mean for people who live in the Northeast. And we can find out from the man in the know, Dr. Henry Kippen, who is the chief executive at the outgoing North of Tyne Combined Authority, but more importantly, the interim chief executive at the incoming North East Mayoral Combined Authority. Henry, welcome along. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to join us.
No, at all, Rob. Thanks for inviting me.
No worries. So we have just been hearing from Dan about the rather excruciating path the North East has taken to get to this point, but we now have a devolution deal, all 48 pages of it. And which bits of it are you most excited about in terms of their ability to transform the Northeast?
I have to say, Rob, it may be 48 pages, but they're very readable. They're very public. I think people should be reading the devolution deal and really working out for themselves what excites them. But from my point of view, the biggest thing we can do through devolution here in the region is about bringing together the different parts of the region. It's about being able to speak with one voice where the region needs to and wants to. It's about being able to set out a version of the region's future with a bit of confidence and a bit of investment behind it. And that's really fundamental to devolution, isn't it? You can see across all of the areas that have gone through this process, it's partly about the investment, the jobs, the policies, the powers, but it's mostly about the agency of the region and the feeling that you're going somewhere and you can back that with a degree of investment and cross-sector support. So it's that side of it that I think is so important for the region, and that's the most exciting bit from my point of view.
Yeah, and I guess the implication of that is that the Northeast doesn't currently have that agency or autonomy that it would like to deal with these problems. Sort of, we were hearing from Dan earlier about the child poverty issue, rates rising in the Northeast is obviously a big deal. I guess the sense is that the Northeast hasn't had the tools to deal with that problem thus far, and the hope is that devolution will give you those tools to tackle that.
So I think the Northeast has done incredibly well with the tools that it has had, and over time, you said yourself, we are as a region top of a number of league tables you don't want to be top of. The fact of the matter is we're also at top of some that you do. So we were looking just 20 minutes ago in another room at FDI levels and the ability of regions to draw in inward investment. And so you've got the Northeast in a position where it's had a long tail leading up to this devolution deal. It's had a go at various versions of what that looks like. And I would say North of Tyne is an example of that, of a number of our authorities sort of testing and proving the concept. My own sense of that is that's worked well, but a really strong political collaboration, which is done on the basis, as you rightly suggest, that you can do more together at a bigger scale than you can do with the current picture. And that's partly about then doing a deal with government to make that true, isn't it? So the two sides of a devolution deal: one is about the region and the extent to which it wants to come together, do things collectively. The other is about then the quid pro quo in terms of those new powers and investment from government. And I think the region's done a good job to stand with a straight back through this process and come out with a deal that I think is going to be quite transformative actually across a load of different subject matter areas.
Yeah, and on the Northeast Combined Authority website, it has some quite specific aims and things that it hopes the devo deal will achieve. It mentions the creation of an additional 24,000 jobs and building an additional 3,100 homes. Obviously, it would be great if that were to happen. How can we be so sure that what is going into the devolution deal will produce these outcomes at the end?
So, you know, any projections from any economist the world over, you could sit there and pore over and wonder how they're going to come true. But in the case of the Northeast Devo deal and what you see in there, we have a lot of confidence, partly because of the track record that the region has. So if you look, for example, at the trajectory of house building, if you look at the, as I've just talked about, the extent to which we've landed big and in many cases anchor investments to increase the amount of jobs in the region, if you look at how the universities are working together increasingly within important economic sectors like electrification, let's say, or clean energy, you can see some of these dynamics starting to happen already. I could look at the last 4 or 5 years and the work that's been done within the north of Tyne and look at the new homes that have been built as a result and the extent to which you're able to create, as I said, new opportunities. We come into that with a lot of confidence. So it's partly about the track record. It's partly about the fact that we know the region has within it the skills to do this anyway. Working together on that scale, I think, gives you sort of rocket fuel underneath that. And the other side of that is, of course, the powers, the easements, the flexibilities you have within the devolution deal, which should be really fundamental to achieving those things. So investment in brownfield land remediation to make sure you can get houses built faster, more and more integrated transport powers to enable people to get into jobs quicker and connect their places, .. You can see all of these things spread throughout the deal. And in a way, you know, because we've had such a long journey to get here, we've been able to say, and I know the political team collectively have absolutely been able to connect the dots and see exactly how that deal can enable some of what they've wanted to achieve over time. So I think we come into that with a lot of confidence, both as public servants, but as a wider region. And, you know, with any of this economic change, you will have had, you know, versions of this podcast with people coming on and talking about the future from the perspective of, you know, the public service, universities, the private sector. We know it isn't one sector alone that achieves any of this. And so that wider change within the region needs to come from a real combination of what we can do as a combined authority, but also how our businesses, our communities, our voluntary sector roll in and support that and are part of that. So, you know, that sense of a big regional coalition that's been building over time that can now start to really realise itself with some impact is genuinely exciting for the region, I think.
So, obviously, to get to this point, you've had to jump through a lot of hoops. There's a lot of consultations that have had to happen. You have obviously to get the deal agreed in the first place. But I think I'm right in saying that in order for it to be on the statute books, as it were, there has to be an order laid in Parliament which creates the mayoral authority and sets up the election for a Metro mayor. That hasn't happened yet, I don't think, has it? Is that due to happen soon? Do you know what's going on with that?
You are quite right. So the journey from signing a devolution deal to implementing that deal through a new public authority existing and a new mayoralty existing is quite a long one. There's a public consultation in there. You know, if you're a good Democrat, as we are, it's important that you do all of these things in terms of ratifying that locally, making sure you've got some public indemnity in the process, making sure you're doing the work right in terms of the legal documentation. And as you say, the order, as it's called, which is in effect the thing that changes the law in order to have the election, needs to be done clearly before that election takes place. So a bit of mansplaining there, I'm afraid. I'm sorry. But in direct answer to your question, the order should be laid in and around the end of January. That hasn't happened yet, but that's imminent. That will then be laid and debated and made, and then that provides for the election. So you will see at the usual time, back end of March, a pre-election period in which candidates will start to campaign, and then an election on May 2nd. So we're confident and we're comfortable that things are happening in the right order. And really at the back end of what is a real sausage machine from signing a deal to getting something out into the world. I don't see any problems on the horizon, but you just never know within this country, the politics we've had over the last few years, who knows? We're confident, but, you know, hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, well, yeah, like you say, you do never know with the febrile atmosphere in Westminster, who knows what might happen. But so while all this is going on, you have got the task, you and your team, of actually setting up a new body, a new mayoral combined authority. Obviously, one exists in the north of Tyne already. You are the chief executive of that. But your job is to expand this all the way south of the River Tyne into County Durham. And so it covers this much bigger area. And obviously the Northeast is a very big, very diverse area. It's got the coast, it's got the, you know, the more deprived towns in Northumberland and County Durham. It's got the big cities in the middle. I mean, that must take, can you just take us through what that involves to get that all set up? And is it sort of going to plan thus far?
It's a good job, Rob, that you invited me to a four-day sleepover podcast so I could describe all of the work that goes into that. No, I joke, but I mean, the first thing to say really is you stand or fall on the strength of collaboration that goes into this. And ultimately, you have seven constituent authorities with political leadership that have to sign on the dotted line to do a devolution deal. But the amount of work, and certainly we've seen that out of the back of COVID response, which was done really well collectively into the region and into the planning stage. You need that strength of political collaboration across parties and across places to even move a muscle. So that is absolutely fundamental, and we don't get there without that. So, you know, credit where it's due to the collective political team in the region to enable that. And what that then creates, if you like, that collective political mandate is the ability to start to work in different ways across that region. And as you imply, there's a lot to do in terms of preparation. So there is an operational side to that. We are, in effect, abolishing and reconstituting, if that's even a word. Can I say that properly? You know what I mean. Anyway, there's five organisations, which include North of Tyne, NECA as the other combined authority in the region, Invest North East England, Transport North East, and our LEP, that will become part of the new world. So there's an operational transition that includes a transition for human beings who are going to have to work in this thing, which is as strategic and long-term as what are we here for, and as tactical and short-term as what day do I get my wages and where am I going to sit. So you can imagine there's a lot of work involved in that. And in terms of that policy approach of the combined authority, clearly we take our steer from the devolution deal, but also the evolution of portfolios. So any combined authority, I think, that works well does so with a degree of distributed political leadership. So we have leaders of our constituent authorities taking responsibility really for sponsoring areas of the deal and providing the right kind of leadership for that. So we're working through what those portfolios might contain, what a set of early wins might look like, all with the right kind of flexibility to adapt after the mayoral election. And then there's some really important early wins that are really important in terms of the public, if you like, because these become articles of bureaucracy and public administration if you let them. And really what they're about is change in the region, and they should matter to people. So it's been really important to colleagues across the whole region, actually, that we have a really clear set of early deliverables, which range from adult skills through to the delivery of the investment zone, through to areas where you've got housing and capital investment in our places that are coming through quick, and in a way start to prove the concept of, well, why would you have done this in the first place? So there's a mix of all of those things goes into it. There is, I think, a nuanced and interesting answer to your question about the geography of the region, which is really quite unique, or is unique. I don't think something can be quite unique. I think it actually has to be unique, doesn't it? But if you look at the geography of the Northeast within that devolution deal, as you said, it covers country, coast, city, if you like, so urban, rural, countryside mix. That really clearly means you can't have an economic model that is about stacking them high in the city centre and watching the trickle down happen over years. It's just not going to work. So we know that in those early stages, we're going to have a really clear account of how we understand the needs of our diverse towns, let's say, in County Durham, our coastal communities in Northumberland and all up and down the coast, actually. In some parts of the region, you've got more sheep than people, actually. But the economic opportunity is to make sure those things are knitted together. So the connectivity of the agenda and the fact that we care as much about nature gain, biodiversity and rewilding as we do about urban development within the Devo deal, I think, is important. And as I say, I think that's a unique thing across the English MCAs.
Yeah. And so, like you say, you, I guess, at the combined authority will have, like you say, early wins that you want to deliver in, let's say, the first 100 days or so. But I'm guessing there's an element to which all of this is dependent on who actually gets elected, isn't it? Like, I don't know the detailed policy platforms of each mayoral candidate, but they will bring something different and they may have their own views on the way the combined authority ought to be structured or what its priorities ought to be. So to what extent is what you're doing sort of mayor-proof? Is it dependent on who gets in or who doesn't get in?
So any delivering any devolution deal is a, I think the posh word is tessellation, isn't it? It's a tessellation between a devolution deal, a public document with a set of commitments that we've signed up to, and a set of powers that you can use to deliver things that we've agreed to. So, you know, there are formal powers within the devolution deal. Within our order and constitution, there are requirements for them to be exercised in certain different ways. That's boring but necessary and true, because actually what it points to is most of the decision making and the way that a combined authority works, notwithstanding what you said about a mayor and a mayoral manifesto, is about doing it collaboratively. You have to make decisions collaboratively. You have to make, where possible, decisions through consensus and the ability to work together, make trade-offs. You know, these things aren't, you know, vehicles for rock stars to stand on a rock and say, this is where we're going, and everyone follows and suddenly change happens. They're about actually things being done collaboratively. And I think that's important in the early stages of the life of a mayoral combined authority, because it needs to be felt, the benefit needs to be felt collectively. Clearly, you would take that devolution deal and those powers and start to look at the commitments made in the deal. There is absolutely a period where you integrate that with a mayoral manifesto, and of course it depends who's elected, doesn't it? And that's democracy in action. But you could imagine those mayoral manifestos will be developed off the back of that devolution deal, won't they? So there is a connection between the deal and the collective work that's gone on, manifestos that are then developed, and it's our job to make sure there's a good close relationship between the two. But as I say, you know the way of working that works and sticks best, and I think I'm sure colleagues in areas like Greater Manchester would say this too, is when you can do things collaboratively in a way that is as much by consensus as possible, backed by a really solid evidence base about what's going to achieve the most impact. Now, I can't imagine any mayor not wanting that, so it's up to us to make sure that we've got a really close knit between those things in the months after May.
So I've got to ask you about the money, the cost side of it, because the sort of criticism you often hear from members of the public about devolution and the creation of a new sort of political structure is it's going to cost the taxpayer more money. These new bodies are going to be full of senior officers on big six-figure salaries. I mean, I'm guessing, and looking around some of the other combined authorities in the north, you know, that is true to a large extent. So can you just clarify how much it actually costs to set up a new mayoral authority, and how is it being paid for? And do you think there will be a sort of public relations challenge in justifying the existence of these new roles in the early days of the mayor starting work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a completely fair question. I'd never be defensive about that side of this, because it's important we are good public servants that understand this is, you know, a large part of what we're talking about here at this stage anyway is public money, and it needs to be spent well and with maximum impact. Our indicative budget for year one of the new combined authority is public. We're in the really interesting, I suppose, is a word that carries a lot, doesn't it? But again, unique situation of setting a budget for a new organisation that doesn't exist through two that currently do. So we've had to be really careful and make sure, as you say, that we are adding value, that the structure and the people within the combined authority, we absolutely need them in order to deliver the deal, that I can be really confident about that. But most obviously that the return on investment is clear. So if you look at what's actually happening through this process of doing a new devolution deal, we are, collectively bringing in over 4 billion of new money from a standing start into the region. We are in revenue budget terms spending not much more than the region currently does actually on the cast list of people to deliver that. And we are making sure that is one, new money, and two, that there is no duplication of what currently goes on in the region currently. So I'm sure anyone in my position would say this. One is you need to think about this as return on investment. It is absolutely about a revenue budget that is as parsimonious as possible, but you need people in order to deliver and deliver on that scale of investment that we're talking about, which is in the billions. The other thing I would level really, which is, I'm not making this point politically at all, but if you look at the numbers from the Institute for Government, let's say, that's probably, or maybe the IFS have done a bit of analysis on this, haven't they? But if you look at what's happened in terms of the employment of public servants through and since COVID, there has been quite a large expansion. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think there's been a reasonably large expansion of recruitment in Whitehall through that process, while you've had local authorities in particular going through periods of quite intensive fiscal pressure, to the point where we're still, you know, in terms of the year-on-year budget pressure that they're facing, even big cities like the one I'm sat in at the moment, you know, under intense pressure. So if we are going to have capability to deliver better outcomes in the regions, my view personally is that that capability should be in the regions. It should be about making sure that we are equalising that equation really between what Whitehall spends on people to deliver services and what we can do within the regions ourselves. Because it matters in terms of both the jobs that we were able to create here, but also the capability that we have to deliver.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, well, just to give you an example, I know I was reading in York and North Yorkshire, which is also setting up a new mayoral combined authority. I think it was reported this week that the cost of staff in the first year, I think 4.5 million will be spent on staff salaries in the first year of existence. So I'm guessing the North East mayoral combined authority, being a bigger organization, will that your budget is sort of rather larger than that.
I'll refer the honourable gentleman to our budget proposals, which are online. But yes, I mean, we've got, if to go back to what I said earlier, we are building the infrastructure of the new combined authority from the north of Tyne, from the northeast, as two existing mayoral combined authorities, from the LEP, from Transport Northeast, and from Invest Northeast England. We have a different relationship to some areas to the delivery of our transport priorities. We have an organisation called Nexus in the region, which has its own governance, which will sort of dock into the new combined authority, but remain distinct in governance terms. And it is the combination of those things that deliver the outcomes that we want within the region. That will, in terms of sort of balance sheet for the new combined authority, we're completely open and transparent about that. And as I say, really confident in the ROI. And if you look at the first year of the new CA, you've got, again, don't quote me on this, but about upwards of 350 million in terms of that sort of first year money coming through the authority. So you can see the benefits immediately. So I'm less worried about headlines about the revenue budget and more worried about, are we achieving best impact and can we demonstrate a really clear return on that investment? And I think the answer is yes, immediately.
Now, the other thing I know people will be interested in is sort of scrutiny of the mayor, because they obviously, the electorate will be holding the mayor to account whenever they elect them. In between times, they'll want to know that there are structures in place to hold the mayor to account. I mean, we can think of examples in other places, perhaps in the Tees Valley, where there isn't maybe as much scrutiny on the mayor as some would like. And I saw recently that one recent scrutiny meeting didn't have enough councillors turn up at it to count as an official meeting. So how will the mayor and his senior team be held to account under the new arrangements?
So I'm with you on the need for scrutiny, probity. You know, this again, as I say, these things are the result of democratic processes with public money going through them, and it's absolutely right that we should be thinking about overview and scrutiny of combined authorities. I mean, as things stand at the moment, you've got. I sometimes hear this from not necessarily counterparts locally, but nationally, that there's a feeling that mayoral combined authorities are somehow under-scrutinised or unrepresentative. There was quite a dialogue about that through COVID, wasn't there, in terms of the visibility of some of the mayors and from a ministerial point of view, questions about who should be standing in front of the Public Accounts Committee. And again, I don't think we should be afraid of exploring ways to be more representative if that's the way the wind blows. But as things stand, you have a directly elected mayor who's accountable directly to the public. You've got a cabinet that is made, or a board that is made up of leaders of local authorities with democratic representation. We have overview and scrutiny committees, audit and standards. We have mayoral question times, for example, and we do all of our business in public. So I don't think our starting point is that we feel undercooked in terms of democracy and scrutiny. I think the direction of travel we're heading into, if you look at the Levelling Up white paper and some of the things that government has said around that, the quid pro quo of the level four proposition that was put in the last autumn statement, should I say? Sorry, I was going to say budget, but I meant autumn statement. You'll see within that, and I know that's part of what you're hinting at, that the government is considering now, what does that scrutiny regime look like? Is there a case for combined authorities to be what's considered to be more accountable in terms of, you know, whether you go to public league tables or whether you go to mayors at the pack or whatever it is? I don't feel particularly worried about that. I think if you're doing your business well, as we have been and will be, I don't think there's anything to fear. I think the long-term trajectory of devolution, it's important that mayors and combined authorities they're visible, they're public, they're part of the fabric. They shouldn't be these sort of strange economic experiments that happen out in the region. They should be about how government works and functions and how we do that together. So I welcome the conversation about that, but I don't think we're starting from a place where we are undemocratic or under-scrutinised at all.
Speaking of the electorate, as we were just a minute ago, I'm interested in how yourself and, you know, your team are going to try and raise awareness amongst the population of the Northeast about the fact that this is happening, the fact that there's going to be an election and that a new elected mayor is going to be coming in. I mean, just looking at sort of turnout figures at mayoral elections in the Tees Valley, last election, it was 34%, up from 21% 4 years earlier. In Greater Manchester, it was 35% turnout at the most recent election, up from 29% 4 years earlier. So it's going, I guess, in the right direction, but still not particularly high given the importance of the role. So how do you go about raising awareness of the importance of this and what the mayor will do when he or she is elected?
So I keep giving you two-part answers like Sherlock Holmes with his two-pipe problem, but let me give that one a go. So it's a good question, and as a, I think, a short and a long-term answer, really. In the short run, for us as a emerging new mayoral combined authority, there's, as you hinted at with your question at the top of the shop, an appropriate order to do these things in. So there is a limit to how much public information and how much, if you like, publicity we can do before that order is laid in Parliament. That all needs to be done in the right way. The Chief Executive of Sunderland City Council, who will be the regional returning officer, has responsibilities to the candidates through that process, etc., etc. But we will run a public information campaign in collaboration with DLUC as the relevant department, in exactly the way you would expect, objectively, in that period between the order being made and the pre-election period starting. So there will be more within the public domain than there currently is. That will be done hand in glove with government in the way that's appropriate. Obviously, you're going to have an election campaign, so each of the candidates will want to put manifestos out there. They'll want to be as visible as possible. I imagine we'll have hustings and all of the usual things that you might want to run some yourself. I don't know. I'm sure there's plans afoot. But certainly, I think that will increase the visibility. But the real answer is, for the region, is an answer over time, isn't it? And you increase the visibility and you increase the importance to the public and the meaning and hopefully the turnout over time on the basis of impact. This is important because it is doing things that matter to me, ... And the trajectory that you've described, I think, to some extent reflects that. In other areas that you've seen these structures emerge, you've seen mayors emerge, you've seen a bunch of head scratching at the start of the process about, well, what does this mean for me? What are these things? What powers have they got? You're in a different place in some of those areas that you described now. Far less people would scratch their head and go, who? I don't understand what you mean. I don't understand why they're doing this. And it's up to us as a region to create the maximum impact so this feels important to the public. So there's a two-way street there, I think. And the other thing I would say, as the cherry on top, really, is that it is, I think, partly the responsibility of government as well, having enabled and presided over these devolution deals, to follow through on the promise of devolution and make sure that more and more powers, funding, ability to self-determine, all of the things we've talked about are developed for the regions. There's no point in doing this, if you like, and then saying, well, that's nice. Let's keep these things as they are. You inevitably, as a political team and as a public, actually, are going to want more and better and progression. And I think it's important that we have both government and the regions pushing together on that, because that's what's going to mean more to the public over time, isn't it?
Yeah, and you, on that subject, the obviously Greater Manchester and West Midlands have what is described as trailblazer deals, giving them more powers and more importantly, I think, a big single pot of money that they can spend as they wish, which is not the case everywhere. Obviously, you don't want to run before you can walk, but is it a hope that you would start talks with government about getting a trailblazer deal of your own quite soon after the new mayor is in place? What's the sort of time frame for that?
Yeah, so again, good question. And it is actually a matter of public knowledge, is that the phrase, that we are in discussion with government about a trailblazer deal for the Northeast. So within the Northeast devolution deal that we've just been talking about, there is a couple of sentences at the front end of the document. Forgive me, I can't remember the page and paragraph number, but that sets out that the Northeast would begin negotiations with government in early 2023 on a deeper devolution deal following Greater Manchester and West Midlands. So that has happened and is happening. You saw within the Autumn Statement, again, buried within a paragraph somewhere deep within the thing, a reference to that bespoke Northeast deal. So we are in the process of working with government on that at the moment. That will be a combination of some of the things that our political team, the seven leaders, have been really consistent about from the back end of the last deal to now. It will also take account of, is probably the right way of putting it, what you've seen emerge in the West Midlands and GM and through the Autumn Statement as a set of level four provisions. So yes is the answer to your question. I think that's really important. It's important for us because devolution in many senses, I think, is a bit like a ratchet in that you need to keep going, don't you? You need to keep saying, well, what next, what next, what next? And these trailblazer deals are, they were badged as being fiscally neutral, weren't they, at the outset. So I don't think even GM or West Midlands thought they were getting millions and millions and a lot of new powers. But they're important in that they start to edge you towards where you need to go over the long run, which is that devolution becomes, one, a way of working, two, more like the devolution you see to nations, if you like, in that you're starting to get flexibilities across silos that allow you to cross-invest and operate in a way that's more flexible. But the Northeast will have to go through its own journey. We're not Manchester, we're not the West Midlands. And ultimately, any deal has to have two sides agreeing to it. So I'm saying that now with confidence that we've got on the table something that looks good from the region's point of view and hopefully from government's, but that's all TBD in terms of anything being finalised. So it's a watch this space. But the fact that we're doing it is public knowledge. It's out there.
Yeah. Well, it's the start of a fascinating and exciting journey for the Northeast, and we'll be watching with interest how it all unfolds in the next few months. Henry Kippen, thank you so much. Hi again. Thanks for listening to the Northern Agenda podcast. If you liked it, why not leave a written review wherever you get your podcasts, as it helps us get Northern politics in front of more people. And don't forget, you can subscribe to our daily newsletter at www.thenorthernagenda.co.uk. The Northern Agenda is a laudable production for Reach. It's presented by me, Rob Parsons, and this week's episode was edited and produced by Celeste Adams. See you next week.